John tells me I can start, so I'm going to start. So first of all, welcome. I'm going to call the January 2014 session of the Writers Advisory Council to order. I'm Ben Ball. I'm the chair of the council, at least for a couple more minutes.
An hour.
Yes, for an hour or so. So welcome, old members, new members. It's a new year, and we've got a lot to talk about. So. Let's move on directly to the public comment period. John, do we have any public commenters
signed up? I don't have anyone signed up unless anyone...
Any public commenters who didn't sign up but would like to speak? Seeing none, we'll move on to the approval of the agenda. We usually do that by unanimous consent. Is there anyone who has any comments on the agenda before we move forward? Seeing none. We're going to approve the past meeting minutes.
We're not. I've already broken my New Year's resolution.
I'm wagging my finger in your general direction. And I know that Carol's doing the same thing. Okay, so we will postpone that until next time. So that brings us to probably our most important item of the evening, which is member introductions. As I was telling Carol before, the room looks awfully full now, where it didn't just a couple months ago. So we have a lot of new members, and a lot of old members too, some of whom are newer to the council, some of whom have been on the council for some time. So I think we'll just start by going around and introducing ourselves, both new members and old members, just so we can get a sense of who's here. So I'm Ben Ball. I'm again the chair for the next hour or so. And I am a D.C. representative. I live in LaDroit Park. I've been in D.C. since 2009 or 2005, depending on how you count it. I've been on the RAC. This is my third year on the RAC, starting my third year on the RAC. So, yes, I'm a senior policy advisor at the Department of Homeland Security, where I work on immigration issues. Barbara? Oh, and one technical note, since this is being live streamed, when you talk, please just press the button on your microphone before you say anything, and you'll see it go red there, and that means that you're live. So, Barbara.
Hi, I'm Barbara Hermanson. I'm from Alexandria, and I have been serving as the vice chair from Virginia for the past year. I've been on the council for a year and a half. I filled out someone's term that was expiring, that just expired last month, and so I have been reappointed, so I'm starting a three-year term now. I live not in Old Town, but on the Arlington side of Alexandria, and I can't remember what's there. Oh, I work, I've spent most of my life as a liaison in between technology groups and business groups, trying to be a translator. But I currently work in the technology group at the Washington Post, where I am an analyst and test coordinator and various whatever they need that day.
I think we should also say what metro services we use the most.
I probably use rail most, but on a typical day, I'm on the bus and the rail. And I ride, in the course of a month, I ride all five lines, all rail lines.
Okay. Sir.
Hi, my name's Rob Pappas. I'm new to the board and glad to be here. I live in McLean, Virginia, and I use bus and rail service, either 24 or 15K bus and the Orange Line. I work down at L'Enfant Plaza. I work in aviation safety for the Federal Aviation Administration, and I'm very happy to be here.
Welcome.
Hi, my name is Dexter Williams. I'm one of the representatives from D.C. This is my first year on the RAC. It was great meeting you guys at the meet and greet. I currently serve as a policy assistant for the Alliance for Health Reform, and I use both the rail and bus.
All right, thank you.
I'm Thomas Stratz. I live in Arlington, but I'm one of the at-large members, so I get to represent everybody, I think. I'm new to the council. I use the train most of the time. I work for a company called 2U, and we have an office at the New Carrollton end of the Orange Line. So I spend most of my morning and evening on the Orange Line for, like, I don't know, 50 minutes per way every day.
Welcome.
Hi, my name is Lorraine Silva, and I represent Arlington County. I have been with the RAC since late 2009. Same as Barbara, I came in to complete a term, and then I was reappointed. I use bus and metro. I also use all the local jurisdictions' transit. I'm basically a transit person all the way around.
Hi, everybody. My name is Jose Morales. I'm representing DC. I'm new here, and I'm coming from Petworth. I use the rail more than the bus, primarily the green and the yellow lines. I work up in DuPont and Farragut, so I also have to use the red line.
Great.
Hello, everyone. I'm Deborah Titus from Fairfax County. I've been riding the metro rail since 1977. When I first came to Gallaudet University, I ride a yellow line between home and other places, too.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Candace Walsh. I've been on the RAC for a couple of years now. I am a representative from the district. I live in Columbia Heights. I am a contractor and an attorney, so that's pretty much what I do. And I guess that's it.
And hello, I'm Etta Sheree Washington. I live in the Brentwood area at the Willine Avenue Station. However, I ride all the lines. I work as a patient navigator. I negotiate people through their cancer care continuum. So at all the hospitals, all the clinics, and I generally work with economically disadvantaged people who live in the Southeast.
Hi, I'm Fred Walker. I live in Centerville, Virginia, and I ride the Fairfax County buses and the Orange Line in from Vienna to Foggy Bottom every day. And this is my second year on the RAC, and I work in Foggy Bottom at the Red Cross.
Hi, my name is Karen Lynch. I've been a member of the RAC for a year now. I ride the rail primarily, but I've grown to love the circulator as of late. I am a native Washingtonian, so I'm very familiar with the metro system. So I've ridden the rail, the bus, and just about everything as well. In a professional capacity, I am a transportation safety professional, like my colleague over here, Robert. I work for the Department of Transportation and the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration.
Hi, my name is Aldaya Mary Miller. I am a new member to the council. I work in Tyson's Corner in communications and healthcare reform, and so I actually take both the rail and bus systems every day. I take the 28A, X, or T, depending on the day, and I ride mostly the blue, orange, and red lines.
My name is Catherine Cordham. I'm one of the new members this time around. I live in Silver Spring, so I'm one of the Montgomery County representatives, and I work for the Transportation Research Board at the National Academies, which is across the street, so I probably have the easiest commute to this meeting every evening. I have a background in transportation. I do a lot of federal transportation policy work through the Transportation Research Board, so this kind of stuff is right up my alley. I can definitely make people's eyes glaze over, so I'm really glad to be among people of like minds.
We specialize in that, so that's good.
Now, I'm Mary Ann Zimmerman, and I've just completed my first year on this board. I'm from Silver Spring. I'm a former transportation addict. I started out as a traffic engineer and retired a year and a half ago. Most recently, I've worked in international development, and part of that included going to Virginia. That's where I got some long commutes. So I bring the pain and agony of the long commutes in some of my understanding. What I do now is primarily red and green line 16th Street bus and then a few connector buses downtown.
Hello, everybody. My name is Dan Turk. This is my first year. It's very nice to meet almost all of you before. That was a great idea to get to know everybody before just sitting here and staring at faces. I live in Columbia Heights. I try to take the buses as much as humanly possible, and I pride myself on figuring out different ways to have different routes to take, combining the buses. And I'm just very excited to be here and very happy that there's so many nice people here to share this time with.
All right, thanks everybody. I think we have a very interesting group here, quite a diverse group, both jurisdictionally, what we do, transit geeks, non-transit geeks, and that's good because we're called upon to represent all riders. And I think we'll find, and we've found definitely over the last 2 years that I've been on the council, that there are a lot of differences of opinion among riders. Yeah, fancy that. And yet we all comprise, you know, Metro's core sort of customer base. So I think it's good that we're here representing all of our different jurisdictions, all of our different points of view. So welcome to everybody. We're going to dive right in to the real meat of the matter here. One of the big issues that I think we're going to be dealing with over the next year, and that is the Metro budget. So I'd like to welcome Tom Webster or Mark Schofield and or to come on down.
And
okay.
And is better than or.
There you go. It's a tag team kind of thing.
Your name tends are under the
So they're going to talk to us about the budget process. Now, this budget oh, they have their own name tags. I don't know. I'm a little intimidated here. I started out with a paper one, just like everyone else. But anyway, welcome, gentlemen. We know this is going to be a long process, the budget process that's going to take up a good part of this year. So we definitely welcome, you know, getting the first bite of the apple here. So.
Well, thanks thanks for having us. Again, I'm Tom Webster. I'm Managing Director of the Office of Management and Budget Services, so OMB, here at Metro. And this is Mark Schofield, who is our Senior Economist. What I will do is step through our proposed, the General Manager's proposed fiscal 15 budget, so the budget that would start on July 1st of this calendar year, so 2014, and from the perspective of what the rider gets from or through that budget, through that investment plan. We'll then go a little bit into the numbers, sort of at a high level. I can also answer questions about sort of how the thing works, if to the extent that people have those questions. We'll then talk a little bit about the fare increase proposal, and some of the outreach strategies and events that are upcoming. So I'll move right into it. So what will riders see from Metro's proposed investment plan? Starting next year, we will be taking delivery of, or actually, we've already started taking delivery of 7,000 series trains. This past Monday, there was a big event out of Greenbelt where we unveiled one of the first cars. Those cars will begin to enter service during the next fiscal year, so starting after July 1st. We'll be installing resilient flooring in the 5,000 and 6,000 series rail cars, so the newer rail cars in the existing fleet. So that's replacing the carpet with resilient floors. Through our capital improvement program, we'll be purchasing about 150 new low-floor heavy-duty buses. So about 100 of those are to replace buses that are in the existing fleet that have aged out, and about 50 are for expansion of service. We also rehabilitate every year about 100 buses when they reach about their midlife point to make them last longer. We'll be advancing some more improvements on bus priority corridor networks, which are our 24 highest ridership routes. There's investments in both our capital improvement program and our operating budget to improve service on some of those 24 routes. That's a multi-year effort, so each fiscal year for the past few years, we've been improving service on a few routes each year. Again, next year we'll be purchasing about 150 Metro Access vehicles to replace Metro Access vehicles that have reached the end of their useful lives. So there'll be sort of a new style van to replace some of those older vans. Escalators. So we have a very aggressive escalator replacement program that is moving forward. During the next fiscal year, 14 will be replaced, and another 27, about 27, will be completed the major rehabilitation. Many of you have heard about our new lighting improvements in stations like Judiciary. Over the next year, fiscal year, they'll be lighting improvements in all 47 of the underground stations. We've been doing platform rehabs at a number of stations, but during fiscal 15, Deanwood and Minnesota Avenue will be completed, and then Arlington Cemetery work will begin. We'll have new bike and ride facilities at will be either opened or under construction during fiscal 15. Again, that's through our capital improvement program. And this is an exciting project. And from my perspective, we have an innovative project to improve lighting at all of our parking garages in the system. This is it's lighting from both a customer who uses the parking garage perspective. It'll be brighter. It'll be easier to see and safer, but also be more efficient lighting that will ultimately save Metro money in the long term. So that's a really great project. We also will be continuing our safety and state of good repair investments in the rail system. So there are a number of hard to see but very important projects that replace rail track fasteners, ties, the structure that the rail sits on, all throughout the system. So that work is ongoing. We have very major investment in that area right now and in the next fiscal year. The next few slides shift to what we talk about as our sort of program view. So the areas of emphasis in the upcoming budget. So the first is improving safety for riders and employees. Over the past few years, we've closed 20 of the 29 National Transportation Safety Board recommendations. This is a pretty significant accomplishment addressing some of the key safety issues. We will, in fiscal 15, begin retiring the 1000 Series rail cars, which is one of the major remaining open NTSB recommendations. Those will be replaced with the 7000 Series cars over the next few years. We'll also be implementing a new, we are implementing a fatigue risk management system. Caring for our customers, I think some of you have heard from Lynn Bowersox about our caring for customer care program. FY15, there's a significant emphasis on the customer care program and investments in that area. Key things that we're funding through the budget are customer satisfaction survey and improved communication tools for communicating with customers. Connecting communities with new rail and bus service. So big news, the Silver Line will be opening and will begin, we'll have a full fiscal year of service in FY15. So starting in July will be the first fiscal year that we operate the service.
So it will be operational by July is what you're saying.
That's
the first date we've ever heard on.
We will also be adding buses to implement priority corridor networks and finishing or during fiscal 15 we'll finish our test track and commissioning facility, which is an important capital investment that will allow us to more quickly and efficiently accept new rail cars as they come in. So this facility is out at Greenbelt and will be nearing completion over the summer and be completed in the fall this year. Next. Thanks. So delivering quality service. We have quite clearly a continued emphasis on improving our performance in a few key areas here. Maintaining our fleets to provide reliable service. We've had recent, over the past couple of years, significant improvement in our escalator availability due largely to the investment that we've made in that in escalator rehabilitation and replacement program. Go ahead. Investing in employees, so very key area of focus in our budget is improving metro employee engagement, succession planning, so building leadership within the organization for the future, and also this is sort of a insider thing, but realigning our job functions, modernizing how the roles are defined here at Metro and how people's jobs are aligned to the organization's business plan and goals. Okay, a little bit on the numbers. So each year, or on an ongoing basis, we in the budget office and across Metro are looking for areas to find efficiency, to do our business in a more efficient and effective way, to contain costs over the long term. So really, throughout the year and at the kickoff of our budget process, we do that sort of belt tightening, evaluating business processes, particularly on the administrative and sort of finance and support side, looking for opportunities to do things cheaper or more effectively. What this means is basically we have evaluations done of business processes, looking for those efficiencies, looking for places where maybe we could do something, make an investment in automation that allows something to be done quicker or with more accuracy the first time. We also have investments like the one I described earlier in the parking garage lighting, where we're making an initial investment in a capital project to improve lighting. And over the long term, we expect to save money from that, so containing long-term costs through an initial investment through the budget. So our net operating budget, proposed operating budget for fiscal 15 is $1.7 billion, which is slightly higher than last year. It's about $105 million more. That budget is funded primarily through three sources. One is contributions from the jurisdictions in the region. Second is fare and fee revenue. And the third is advertising revenue and other sort of miscellaneous sources that make up a relatively small percentage. The bulk of our funding comes from, operating funding comes from local jurisdiction contributions and fares and fees. On the capital side, our capital, proposed capital program for fiscal 15 is about $1.1 billion. This is, the capital program is where we make investments in our assets, so replacing our vehicles, replacing our facilities, and adding new infrastructure and vehicles and equipment. The base program is primarily focused on those safety projects, those rehabilitation and repair projects. That's about $945 million. And then we have proposed $191 million of expansion and capacity investments. We'll go into a little bit more detail on that a little bit later. I'll turn it over to Mark to talk a little bit about fares.
Okay, thank you, Tom. I was here a few months ago as we were just kicking off the budget process, and so I introduced myself to some of you then, but in the spirit of the introductions that we just did. My task within the Office of Management and Budget Services is ridership and revenue forecasting, fare policy, and the allocation of the jurisdictional subsidies. And I'm a longtime resident of Northern Virginia, grew up out in Fairfax, and live down in Alexandria now, so I'm a daily rider of the Yellow Line. So when I was here before, we were just getting into the whole issue of discussing what we might do with fares for FY15. We had sort of a preview of where we were headed, but now that the general manager has actually proposed his budget in December, and then the board has had their opportunity to review that and offer some changes in terms of what they'd like to see as far as proposed fares, we can now talk in a little more detail about exactly what's out there and what might potentially be adopted. So I'll just go through it sort of on a mode basis, you know, for bus, for rail, for access, and for parking. And then I'll just hit the highlights, and then when we get into the Q&A, I'll be happy to talk in more detail. So for Metro Bus, well, and just to be clear at a little bit of a policy level, when the general manager proposes his budget, he proposes a set of fare changes that will generate a certain amount of new revenue. What the board wanted after they had a chance to look at the budget was a little bit more flexibility. They wanted to say, well, what if we wanted to do rail fares in this way instead, or what if we wanted to do bus fares this way? So what is in the, and I think you guys have copies of the docket there in front of you. So what's going out to the public hearings is a slightly wider range of potential fare increases than what the general manager had proposed at first. And so what's proposed in the docket is the maximum amount that could possibly be adopted, but the board very likely will adopt something less than what the maximum is. They wanted additional flexibility to consider different fare combinations. So for Metro Bus, the base smart trip fare currently is $1.60. What is out there now as far as the proposal is that it could go as high as $1.85, but it could come in at something less, could come in at like $1.75. Similarly, for the cash fare on bus, which is currently $1.80, that is proposed to go up to $2. But what the general manager had actually proposed was that we get rid of the cash surcharge on bus. And this is something that the board is continuing to weigh back and forth. There are some benefits on each side of the equation. And I think that is certainly an area that they are looking for some feedback from the public and from the RAC, how people feel about that particular issue. And we also, along with the local routes, there are proposed increases to the express and the airport routes. For Metro Rail, the general manager had proposed an increase of 3% for both peak and off-peak. What's in the docket right now is an increase of up to 4%. So, what the board wanted was some flexibility to consider different combinations of fare increases. Just for context, and I have a table here and a couple slides that will give you some examples of what that would mean for sort of a typical trip. For an average trip of $3, an increase in that range would be about 10 to 15 cents per trip. Oh, well, we can jump to it right now. Sure. So we have just some sample trips on rail that you might take during both the rush and the non-rush periods. A short distance one from Southern Avenue to Navy Yard, a medium one from Bethesda to Roslyn, and then a long one, almost a max fare, from Franconia Springfield to Metro Center. So what you would be looking at, if there were the 4% increase, which is the maximum one there in the docket, you know, you'd be looking at a 10-cent increase on the short trips, a 15-cent increase on the medium trips, and about a 20-cent increase on the longest trips. And so just to translate that into something that maybe is a little easier to understand, if you're making that sort of medium distance trip as a commuter, that would translate into about $6 per month as far as the total increase. Thanks. So just actually, can you go back to the rail? Just at the moment, not at the moment, no change currently being proposed to the structure where we have a dollar surcharge for paper fare cards. We are in the process, not in this fiscal year, but by fiscal 16 in about the next 18 months or so, to eliminate the paper fare card. You'll be hearing some more about that, and if you guys have questions, we can talk about that, but that won't actually take place in 15. We'll be making the investments that we have to, the changes to the fare vending machines and things like that, but that won't actually hit until the next year after that. We also, for those of you who have been around for a little while, the previous fare increase that we had for fiscal year 2013, we made some changes to the off-peak fare structure, and if you know the way that our rail fares are calculated based on the distance that you travel, some folks who make sort of middle distance trips, 6, 8, 10 miles, would have seen very large fare increases because of that change in how we do the off-peak fares. And so we put a cap in fiscal 13 to prevent those riders from seeing a very large, you know, 40, 50, 60% increase. We will have that same cap in place this time around again to make sure that those riders in those particular distances in the off-peak don't see very large fare increases. For those of you who are familiar with Metro Access, no change to the overall way that fares are calculated. So the fare will still be twice the comparable rail or bus fare. That will mean that the minimum fare will increase along with the bus fare. So if it's currently 2 times $1.60, so $3.20, if the bus fare were to go to $1.75, then that would raise it up to $3.50. The maximum fare, however, is not going to go up. It's going to stay at $7. And people who are eligible for Metro Access will continue to be able to ride the rail and the bus for free. And then for parking, we have proposed an overall increase of 25 cents at all the stations. If you don't use the parking, just for comparability, the parking currently at most of the rail stations is between $4.50 and $5, so that would be about a 5% increase. We also are considering an additional surcharge. Without getting into the weeds, I can explain this if you want more. An additional surcharge of up to 50 cents at the parking garages at the stations in Prince George's County. And so that money would go to Prince George's County to pay back debt related to the parking garages in Prince George's County, or to be used to build new Metro parking facilities again within Prince George's County. And you may have heard also that we're talking about reducing our price for Redskins parking. We offer parking at Largo and Morgan Boulevard. It's not very well used because it's a long walk to FedEx Field, and we don't allow tailgating. So we're going to lower the price and see if we can get some more people to use it. But that's not going to make a huge difference one way or the other on the revenue. So again, there are the examples. And just to step back and talk about sort of the policy aspects of this. As Tom said, the increase in the budget for last year to this year is about $100 million. And so the way that we always are trying to attack this is, you know, reduce our costs, especially our administrative costs. We're not trying to reduce service. We want to reduce the cost of delivering service to the riders. We want to try to increase revenue from non-transit sources, whether it be from advertising or from fiber optics, whatever sources that we can. Then we want to go to the local jurisdictions, ask them for additional contributions, and you know, only then do we want to try to go to the riders and ask the riders to contribute more. And so the balance, actually, John, if you could just go back a couple to where we had one or two more, please. So the way that it breaks down this year in the budget, at least as it's currently proposed, is about $44 million more from the jurisdictions, about $30 million more from passenger fares and parking fees, and then about another $30, $31 million from having that full year of the Silver Line and from a little bit of additional ridership growth on the bus and the rail system. And so we, you know, again, it's always a balancing act from a policy perspective of where are you going to get that funding from. And so we hope and think that this is a pretty equitable place to land. So.
Part of the public hearing process, each year, Metro seeks public comment on our proposed capital improvement program, so the capital investments that we'll be making. So I mentioned a lot of these already, but during the public hearings we'll, and in the docket, there's discussion of the types of or the categories of investment that we're proposing. You'll see that on this list there, our investments are split into sort of the types or types of assets that we have. The bulk, again, of our capital investment through our budget next year will be in safety improvements, placing equipment and vehicles and infrastructure that we have currently, and then in rehabilitating and replacing those assets. We have some planned investments to kick off some of these longer-term expansion and capacity enhancements. So you won't see, the rider won't see major, other than the Silver Line, of course, but major capacity increases in fiscal 15, but we'll be making those initial investments, or we propose to make those initial investments next year, and to continue those so that hopefully in the medium term, there's some significant improvements, these primarily in increased A-car trains, so increased numbers of rail cars and increased capacity, so to accommodate growth and to hopefully reduce some congestion in the near term. And then, of course, in the bus program, adding buses to those priority corridor network routes and to improve on-time performance in some key other routes in the system. So I can go into more detail on all of those are, but those are the categories. So our strategic plan that the board adopted and our six-year capital improvement program proposed to invest in additional rail cars. Rail cars take some time to manufacture and to be delivered and tested and put in service. The current plan has significant increase in rail cars coming on in December of 2020. So about 220 rail cars would be here at that point in time if the current plan moves forward. We'd then be operating about just under 80% eight-car trains at that point in time. Buses a little bit more. The benefit would be accrued sort of more over the longer period of time there. So the current plan proposes to expand the bus fleet by 50 buses per year. So those take about a year to be produced and delivered and tested and put in service. So you'd see if that current plan moves forward, pretty significant increases in bus service in some key areas quickly and then over a longer period of time. Many of those expansion investments are proposed but not yet funded. So as we work through this budget process, we'll see how this plays out. But, so that there's a few different aspects of it. But on the bus side, it's nearer term. On the rail, we have to make some initial investments that pay off over a longer period of time. This next chart is a little busy, but this is where our proposed, how our proposed capital budget is funded. We get about half of our current capital funding from federal federal grants, and the other half comes from primarily from the local jurisdiction, so matched to those federal grants and additional contributions. Fares do not go towards capital improvements. Fare revenue supports only the operating budget. So part of the reason we seek public comment on this is it's part of the federal process to facilitate our grant applications and then ultimately our grant awards for federal money. You'll see all the way at the bottom, there's $150 million proposed for Metro 2025 investment. That's the unfunded portion that I was just describing of the program.
So we're just actually today really kicking off about a month's worth of outreach activities surrounding the budget. We were actually supposed to have our first station pop-up at New Carrollton yesterday, but since it was about 5 degrees at 6:30 in the morning, we decided to postpone that one. We had one today at Anacostia, so that's actually the first one. We'll be having 9 of them total. This is where actually teams of about a half a dozen Metro staff from the budget office, from the planning office, from civil rights, from our survey and research groups, from customer service, a nice group of knowledgeable people are out there at stations and actually at a couple of bus transit centers as well to hand out pamphlets, to answer questions, to encourage folks to take the survey, and just to encourage people to come to the public hearings, and just generally, and if you can't come to the public hearings, which a lot of people can't, to give those folks a venue to ask questions and to provide feedback. I'm actually going to be out at Seven Corners at 6:30 tomorrow morning at the bus transit center out there, and Tom is actually going to be at Wheaton later in the month. So we really are pushing our staff to be out there to and ourselves to talk to the riders. We also have what we're calling street teams, which are contractors rather than WMATA employees, and they are at a lot more stations and transit centers, 23 of them, and they're more just pushing information, handing out the pamphlets. Some of them will have tablets and getting riders to take the survey right there, but they won't be able to answer sort of the detailed questions that the pop-up teams can. We also, it's not on here, but we're going to reach out to about a dozen different community groups, go to some of their meetings, and explain the impact of the FY15 budget, and so that's yet another way to reach out to people and let them know what's happening. And again, this is to both encourage people to come to the public hearings, which will sort of cap off the outreach, or if they can't make it, again, to give them a venue where they can provide feedback. So we will be having 6 public hearings at the end of January and the first week of February, 2 each in the district, Maryland and Virginia. Each hearing will have a WMATA board member there, as well as a member of WMATA's executive leadership team. They'll be giving a presentation. It's actually going to look a lot like the one that we just gave. You guys are sort of getting a sneak preview of it. And then there will be a lot of opportunity for public comment and public feedback. We also will be accepting tests. So that last hearing, I believe, is on the 5th or the 6th? 6th. Thank you. We will be accepting testimony and feedback for another 5 days beyond that. And then once that date on February 11th is reached, then we as staff will be pulling together all the feedback that we've received through the hearings, the pop-ups, all the different, you know, the survey, and documenting all of that and reporting that back to the board so that they can understand exactly what the public's reaction to the budget and the fares and the CIP and everything has been.
All right. There's a lot of information there. And we definitely appreciate you coming to relay it to us. We have about 10 or a little more than that minutes left in this agenda item. We have a pretty full agenda tonight. So I'm not gonna go around. I'll just ask people if they have comments. Just to usually our tradition here at the RAC is if you have a comment, you take your nameplate and put it like so. So I think we'll just do that for the remaining 10 minutes. So Lorraine, you want to start us off?
Sure. Thank you for the presentation. I just want to make a comment. When you have these pop-ups, meetings or presentations, however you know you call them, I would appreciate if you have Spanish-speaking staff available, because you have some communities, like for example, when you mentioned Seven Corners, there's a large Hispanic community there that honestly, you can give this very helpful. I really do appreciate this, but on a meet and greet kind of situation, that can be problematic.
We will be having both a Spanish speaking representative and a Vietnamese speaking representative at Seven Corners tomorrow.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thanks. Candace?
So I'm mainly a bus rider, so I just wanted to ask a couple of questions because you talked about adding additional buses to the fleet and also about advancing the bus priority corridor. So, for example, I do ride the bus every day, and I see that the newer buses that are coming out, and this is, might just be a small issue, but in the long term may cost a lot of money. For example, the bus seats, I don't know, like the newer ones that we have, I don't know if the buses that are coming out are going to be fabric like that. But it's sometimes a huge issue when you're traveling. And so I don't know if that's how the new buses are going to be. But, for example, when it rains, people can't sit down because it's wet. And you can't tell sometimes until you sit down. You're on your way to work, and it's not pretty. Or you see them, people have slashed the seats open. So I don't know why there was a shift from the way that they were before when they were plastic and you could easily wipe them off and clean them to this new cloth. Type of seat, which seems to have a large number of problems. Also, I was wondering, what are some of the routes that you're thinking about putting the advanced bus priority corridors in? I'm assuming like 16th Street is most likely one of them, because that would be very helpful.
I know off the top of my head, while Tom looks, the route that's going to see the most investment in fiscal 15 is the 28X in Virginia.
Okay.
That runs along Leesburg Pike. So that's going to see signal priority and a lot of those other sort of investments that really improve reliability and on-time performance and all that. And I don't know what the ones are planned to be in the years after that, but we can certainly...
So
certainly get that to you.
We can have somebody provide the rollout plan for the next few years. So I can talk a little bit about the process.
Okay.
So each year, for the past few years, we've made sort of incremental investments in a few of the routes in each jurisdiction. So Maryland, D.C., and Virginia. They aren't selected at random. There's a planning and implementation study that goes in advance of the improvements. So some of you may have actually participated in some of the public outreach on route service evaluation studies or priority corridor network evaluations. And what they typically do is they'll go out and look at the service as it is today and look for opportunities for improvement, whether that's adding buses to the route when there's expansion buses available, or in some cases it might be changing the way the route operates. So an example off the top of my head, the Q2 route, or what used to be the Q2 route in Montgomery County, there was a change in the way the service is provided a few years ago. That was the result of some investment in that route, as well as some basic changes in the structure. So it was split into basically two routes. So I think part of the process, once the budget is identified and in place and approved, and if there's additional resources to make improvements in routes, there's outreach to those local jurisdictions, there's follow-up on those studies, and then the specific routes and the specific improvements are identified and move forward. So there could be some, there are very likely some routes identified now if this funding moves forward, but the specifics are sort of worked out as we get closer to the implementation of the budget.
Those are my only questions for you.
Okay. I'd like to just open up for public comment before I forget. Any public commenters like to? No? All right. Thank you very much. Patrick?
Thank you. Just two quick questions. One, on the hearing in the past, you've had the ability for individuals to have a phone access into the hearings and during the times and leave phone messages. Is that going to be available? Was that considered? Is that possible? For those individuals that can't get to the hearings, it's another alternative. Okay. So it was a phone line. People could just call in and leave testimony. Second.
Pat, sorry. Can I just respond to that? This is Loida. So I think right now it's a little bit late in the process to announce that option. But, you know, we have several ways that they can submit testimony. They don't necessarily have to be present at the hearing. They can send a U.S. mail letter. They can fax. They can email us. They can take the survey, or they can come to one of the hearings.
Okay. All right. So, yes, I get that. Okay. I appreciate that. Then also, just as a clarification on Metro access fares, you mentioned it was twice the bus fare, but I think it's actually twice the combination of bus rail.
Yes, the minimum fare, I was just sorry if I wasn't clear. The minimum fare is usually twice the bus fare. That's the lowest fare that you would pay. So okay. I was just saying that if the bus fare were to go to $1.75, then the comparable Metro
that would
Access
be the lowest,
fare would go to $3.50.
Since Metro Access is calculated mostly on the quickest trip, a lot of times it's a combination of bus and rail, which makes it a little bit more expensive.
That's correct.
At least that's what my committee's told me anyway. So. Thank you so much.
Ed Sherry?
Oh, okay. I had two comments, and thank you for your presentation. How are you going to pick the nonprofits that you're going to speak to? You're going to have an open forum? You're going to come to the organizations? Or how can I get my nonprofit on the list?
That's the question, right? Our Office of Civil Rights, or I guess that's changed now. It's
EOER?
Yes.
Thank you.
Equal Opportunity and
That's
sorry. That office has been lining up different groups to speak to, and they're trying to, as I said, I think it's about a dozen groups, and they're trying to spread it sort of equally across the region. So we could certainly, I don't think they have that list completely finalized yet, so we could certainly put you in touch with them.
Okay, my second comment is about the lighting. You're going to
Improve
the lighting at all the parking garages. If the new one was just built like Willard Avenue Station 2 years, seems like that should be already be in effect. I don't understand the approved lighting, exactly what it means in a brand new garage.
Well, there are a number of different aspects of this. I think the emphasis of the lighting investment program is on those older garages with the much older equipment and lighting that's failing or extremely inefficient. To the extent that the lighting is there and functioning and does not need to be improved, I don't think we'll be tearing out brand new lighting. It may be that as we evaluate that garage and look for ways to improve the lighting there, we may be adding additional lighting as opposed to taking out brand new lighting.
Right.
And just in general, where we currently have either fluorescent or incandescent lighting, it's all going to be LED lighting with the new project.
Just want to emphasize it's a brand new garage.
Dan?
Thanks for the presentation, guys. Could you just give me a quick answer to just a simple question? This is the first Metro budget I've looked at. I'm just curious as to comparing it with other budgets and fare increases. Is there any real difference in the priority or any real difference in proportionally where you're getting the money from fare increases, like which type of riders, which type of service? And on the other side, is there any real difference in terms of where you're spending the money? For example, are you proportionally, is the focus more this year on bus than usual, more on Metro than usual? Is there any real difference, or is it just a continuation of policies? Because it looks to me like it's just kind of a continuation and just a slight fare increase.
Why don't you do fares first?
I think we've viewed this in general as a pretty much an incremental fare increase, hopefully fairly modest. On a percentage basis, it's a little bit higher on the bus side than on the rail side. But overall, I think it's in line with what we've done in the past.
In terms of the investment, is it focusing on improving the network across the board, or has there been something sort of looking at, hey, we're working on the bus system more now, or more the rail system? Not in terms of the amounts of expenditure. It's always going to be higher on the rail, but is there an effort to, or is it just a continuation of regular policy?
So it's actually a very complex question.
You can answer it however.
Yeah, I think the majority of Metro's budget, so our $1.7 billion operating budget and our slightly over $1 billion capital program, is continuation of ongoing investment. So in order to provide the service that's out there today, you have to continue doing many of the same things. I think part of what this presentation emphasizes is from a investment strategy, from a business plan strategy, and from a sort of point of emphasis where we are focusing our energy as opposed to maybe the gross dollars is in these key areas. So we have a significant increase in investment in escalator replacement and rehabilitation. So that's on the rail side, but that's a sort of a station improvement and a improvement in our existing facility. On the bus side, we have in the capital program, we have a need every year to replace the buses that have reached the end of their useful life. That happens every year. That's an ongoing thing. The resilient flooring on the rail car, that's a new sort of investment. That's a new initiative, an area of focus. But in terms of gross dollars, many of the things are, yes, very similar to what they would be on an ongoing basis. I think you could sort of pick out initiatives and areas of focus, if that answers your question.
I just say one more thing about the fares as well. I think I'm relatively new to the agency. I've only been here a couple years, and I think I sort of, as we came into the fare process this year, I was sort of naively hoping that we could discover some magical pass product that the riders would love and that would get us more revenue and that would, you know, that would just be the greatest thing in the world. And obviously that is a tough challenge, but I think we do have an opportunity coming once the new fare payment system is rolled out in a couple years, which is where, you know, people are going to be able to pay with their smartphone or their federal ID or their chip-enabled credit card. It's also going to give us a lot more flexibility to design, to change the way that we do our fare policy. And another outreach piece that we didn't actually include on here, we have a tool called Mind Mixer, and you can find the link on the website along with the survey. And it's kind of like a more interactive survey, sort of a blog, and we've posed some policy questions on there that we would like riders to react to and sort of have a discussion about with us. And one of those questions is actually, in the future, what sort of fare policy changes would you like to see that are maybe a little bit more out of the box compared to the way that we do fares currently? So if you guys have an opportunity to go and do that and specifically provide some feedback on that question, we would love to hear that. So.
Thank you. I'd like to get to everybody, but we really, again, have a pretty full agenda tonight. This is not going to be our last bite at this apple. We're going to have a lot of other opportunities to comment on all of this. I'm assuming that our RAC committees are going to be taking all of this up as well. So I just want to thank you guys, first of all.
And if you guys want to email us some questions about anything that we've talked about here, we'd be happy to.
Sure. One thing that I just want to highlight for you as you leave, mm-hmm. In terms of the split between jurisdictional and jurisdictional contributions and rider contributions,
yes, right.
You've portrayed that as a pretty nice even split that seems very fair. But from a rider perspective, that just means that I'm paying twice. You know, I'm a taxpayer that gives money to the jurisdiction, and I'm a rider that pays the direct fare that way. I'd much rather just pay it through my taxes, quite frankly. But
Ben,
anyway,
because they're getting set up now. I just wanted to ask somebody to let us know who the community groups are and when they're meeting with them.
Okay, okay. Yeah, that would be
we'll
good.
Get that feedback back.
Definitely.
Sure.
All right. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Thanks.
Appreciate it. Okay. Moving on to our next agenda item, the meeting with the board leadership. For new members of the council, the leadership team meets with members of the board on a quarterly basis. And this is our chance to sort of raise RAC issues, get some feedback from the board about what they're talking about, get sort of a preview about what they're going to do, and for them to get a preview of what they're going to get from us in the next little bit. So we had one of those meetings just right before Christmas. So I'm going to turn it over to Barbara to do a quick recap of that.
Let me explain why I get to do this. We had the flight attendants were telling Ben to turn off his phone because he was flying somewhere. Carol's sister broke a bone of some kind, and she had to rush out, and James wasn't available that day, so I was the only one that was there the whole time. It was, I think, my once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for a very private audience with some of the leadership of the board. It was when you guys were there, too, but still, it was quite a day. Ben did get the meeting started, and he described, for those of you who were here last time when we met and we discussed media policy that the board had given to us at the prior meeting with them, we had a lot of questions and requests to understand more about where it came from, why was it the way it was, and for those of you who haven't been a part of this discussion, this is on page 25 of your, the very back page of your packet. Was the policy as given to us at our, I think it was in November maybe, with the board leadership. And so Ben and I helped to convey the message back from the RAC that we had more questions than answers, and we were actually asking that somebody could come to this meeting and give us some more information. We had a lengthy discussion. The majority of our meeting was about this topic. And I just wanted to share some of the comments that they did make because they are not here. The very fundamental point was that they are not in any way trying to control or restrain or tell us what to say. There was not an incident that prompted this. They say they're always surprised by things they read in the media, but it isn't particularly from us. It's just from all kinds of sources. They talked about, you know, the history of the RAC, which it's not a long history. What is it? Is it five? So it's a 9-year history that, you know, we were created to advise the board on writer issues, and they absolutely, positively want to know our position on things. And it's called the Writers Advisory Council because they created the council for us to advise them on writer issues. And they provide various forums, whether it's their monthly board meeting, whether it's this quarterly meeting that the leadership team has, and conduits that we have to them through the staff. And they want the unvarnished truth from us in that advisory role and candor. And they also said how much they value the feedback that we give, and they pointed out to some of you participated in feedback. I know Lorraine and others on the 7000 series before it became a reality, and pointed out some things that they made changes to accommodate. And many of us, I think, were here the night they were showing us the proposed turnstiles. They were planning on going with turnstiles and showed us all the turnstiles and the gates, and they got a unanimous negative on the turnstiles. And so they went away from that idea. So we talked a little bit about the Patrick's AAC because the accessibility committee and council, and they really are, it's been around a while, and they're very fond of the model that they provide to the board in terms of the input they give on accessibility issues, and Patrick, you can jump in anytime you want, too, if you want, but they talked about that the council formulates, you know, an opinion and a voice of the council, and that's a lot of work that Patrick and others go through to present, and that kind of feel they'd also love to see us do even more of. And they are, so as even though they want, they're not looking to censor anything we're saying, but they just want to be sure that whenever we do speak with the media, that unless like in the past, Ben has been called upon many times from the media to be the spokesperson of the RAC, which they totally understand. That if you're an individual member, that you keep in, you're very clear that if you're speaking for the RAC position or if you're really speaking from your own personal writer position, those are things that they want to do. So they suggested, as we had already talked about, they thought was a good idea to incorporate this policy and in our discussions that we're planning this year on the bylaws. I'm thinking, is there something you would like to add from the staff point of view that you heard that I maybe haven't covered? Right. If the council has made, if we have made a position that might, they want to hear about it, and they'd rather not hear about it, you know, in the newspaper or in some other media. But they aren't trying to tell us not to speak as much as they want to be sure that we're advising them on things that are important enough that we want to bring them up to the media.
Okay.
Do you have questions for me? Because this, I know, is something very near and dear to your heart, and it was up to a lot of the people here.
Sure. Now, I know that I was only there for a couple minutes, unfortunately, before the flight attendants really did say, turn off your phone. Again, I think you gave a very good summary of sort of how we got to this point. And I guess where I would just leave it is, when we left this at our last meeting, we had tabled discussion of it. We had sort of brought it forward for approval or disapproval from the full RAC. We decided that we needed more information, so we tabled that discussion until this meeting. So that's basically where we are now. We've had some feedback from the board. The board is not interested in coming and asking answering our questions, or they've answered our questions through the meeting that we had with the board, or not answered them, as the case may be. Depending on your perspective. So that's where we stand. This is back on the table. So the motion from last time was just to lay this on the table, basically. We didn't say yay or nay to it. There was some discussion last time about incorporating this into the bylaw review process somehow. Other people thought that we could give it an up or down vote in the RAC. So all of those have been sort of bandied about, but we have not taken a final position on this. So with that, I will open the floor for debate on this measure that we tabled from last time. Yes.
I got a couple of issues. I'm confused about what it is that we're voting on. That's
the
one
policy.
Thing. Well, I would question the, or is it something we can vote on, or I guess we can do whatever we want, but is it appropriate? And the second problem I have is, and this sounds really bureaucratic, is because we don't have the minutes that captured what we said in December for everybody to look at, I really don't feel comfortable talking about it until we have the piece of paper in hand that says what we agreed to do. Because, Fred, I think you made the motion in December that I thought the motion was that we invite a member of the board to come to our next meeting.
Right, which we did.
Yes.
And they declined.
Right. I don't remember that we voted, that your motion included a vote on this policy, but I may be wrong, and I think that we're really at a disadvantage because we don't have the minutes.
Well, there wasn't a motion to vote on it. There was a motion to table discussion.
Right.
So we've reopened the table discussion.
What I don't understand, well, I think he's laid it on the table, but I guess what I don't understand is what is the issue? It's not stated to me clear enough so that I understand where there's any controversy. So I can't even, I have a hard time having an intelligent discussion because I don't see, at least based on what last month's meeting, I didn't see anything that was stated by the board that was in conflict with anything that the RAC has already done. And maybe I'm missing something. So that's, I guess that's why I'm saying I agree with you that I'd sure like to see it in black and white and go over it so I understand what the issues are. I think it's a non-issue.
The issue is prior approval for speaking with the media. I mean, if you look at the first bullet there with a little underlined bit, you know, the member shall notify the Office of Media Relations prior to speaking with the reporter, you know, blah, 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 except in those cases where the RAC member has specific prior authorization from the Office of Media Relations. That's the really the core of the issue. Sorry, I'll just read the whole thing again. The member shall notify the Office of Media Relations prior to speaking with the reporter, except in those cases where the RAC member has specific prior authorization from the Office of Media Relations.
And the question then becomes, you get a call from the Washington Post or the Examiner or whatever, and they ask you a specific question with respect to something that the RAC has passed. Can you respond?
No, not at that moment.
That's not how it is.
But that's my question. Why not? It's already on public record. It's an open meeting, and it's a matter of, I don't know, public policy. I mean, it's discussed here. So, I guess that's where I have I'm not understanding something then.
It's in our bylaws, and it specifically states that it says no member of the Riders Council shall be seen as representing any position of Metro to the general public, including the media, without first having been so authorized by the WMATA Board of Directors. So it's specifically in our bylaws, so we really don't have to have a discussion about it. Our meetings are, yes, public. But what it's basically talking about is if somebody calls you on the phone and if they start asking you questions, you have to make sure that you get authorization before you answer those questions. And I don't really see that we need to vote on it.
My question then is, you said in reading that, you said a position, reading that again, you said a position concerning WMATA. Can you read that section again?
Okay. It says, no member of the Riders Council shall be seen as representing any position of Metro.
Okay,
to the
right
public.
There.
Okay.
Any position of Metro. You're not this isn't a Metro position, it's a RAC position.
Right. We don't represent Metro.
You're not representing Metro, you're representing a decision made by the RAC. This isn't a Metro position, this is a RAC position. I mean, that's kind of why I guess I'm saying what I'm saying. Is that you're not representing Metro, you're representing a decision made by the, at least we should be, a decision made by the Riders Advisory Council. In my meetings, and I'll probably get myself in trouble here, probably not a smart thing to do, but I mean, I can represent a position that the Accessibility Advisory Committee has taken on a particular motion, let's say on truncated domes. We are on record as of approving this, this, and this. And that's our position as AAC. Now, if WMATA decided that they didn't like the truncated domes, it wouldn't change my position on the AAC, but I'm not, so I'm discussing my position of my committee as opposed to WMATA's position. And that's where I see the basic differences. And so I guess I'm asking, can't the RAC communicate RAC positions?
Patrick, I'd like to answer that, and Loida pointed something out in the meantime, too, is that the full paragraph that Ben was referring to talks about matters that are still under discussion at the RAC rather than ones where the position has been established. It talks about if a WMATA RAC member receives an inquiry from a representative, et cetera, and it's asked to speak or comment on matters under discussion by the RAC or on behalf of the RAC, or if the RAC member believes that his or her comments will be construed to have been made on behalf of the authority, then the member
shall notify the office prior to speaking. Can I also make the comment that from their point of view, because I brought up the what you'd said at our last meeting, that you'd not been asked you've not been handed this piece of paper for the AAC to review, and they said they believe this is the process that you already use because you work closely with a WMATA person in your issues that you're addressing.
True.
And that you're already following this.
Oh, I hope so.
And, yeah. I don't know if that clarifies already the situation. But,
But I guess that the position being a different one in that, and I guess that's where the clarification might be, if it's an AAC position, let's say, based on something we voted on, this is what we believe, or this is what we voted on, then I'm just restating it for the, and I don't know if that's in conflict. So you guys.
I think you're right about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll just tell you what, from my experience, when reporters call me, which is on a fairly regular basis, they never call to ask me what WMATA thinks. They are always calling to ask what the RAC thinks. And usually it's on something that we have not discussed. Usually it's on something maybe that we've heard about a year ago, you know, or several meetings ago. I understand where the board's coming from. They want a nice sort of, in a way, confidential type of interaction with us where we don't go to the media, we just contact them directly with our comments. I understand where they're coming from on that. However, I also think that it's our duty as the Writers Advisory Council to be in touch with the public, to interact with the public. And as I think we found very specifically over the last year, that's a very difficult thing to do, to interact with the public directly. You know, you can have hearings, you can have listening sessions, all that, and that does, you know, get a small minority of people involved. But if you're really going to reach people with what people are thinking about and try to bridge that gap between public opinion and, you know, what Metro is doing, the media really is the only way. So I find it a little annoying, quite frankly, that the board has come back to us and asked that we sort of give them, I mean, they've approached it very diplomatically, and I appreciate that. But at the same time, it's a very sort of passive-aggressive statement on their part, in my mind, that basically says, you know, we'd like for you to talk to us, and we'd not like to read about anything else in the media. That's my perspective on it. Again, I'm not sure if anything I said in the past year maybe has prompted this or not.
You know,
I'm quite frankly, I'm just a little bit offended by it.
And if I portrayed it that they only want us to talk to them, that isn't the message I heard. It was that they want us to be telling them when we do have the ideas that we will be sharing or are sharing or want to share. They're not trying to in any way stop us from talking to the media. They also just want a heads up. This is what we want to talk about. They're not trying to shape what we say.
Right, but they came to us early last year with a similar request that was a little different. The request was, hey, if you're going to talk to the media, go right ahead. When you're done with that, please just give us a heads up that you talked with them, maybe a little readout if possible. And I've done that through the entire year. But this represents a change. This is about prior approval. And that's what I'm objecting to. So any further discussion on this? Yes.
Does the board have the power to change these themselves? I've always assumed that the RAC has come into being because of federal funding has mandated that they've done this.
I'll let Carol answer that.
Yeah, I'm not an attorney, and I was, you know, and it'd be interesting to see what the WMATA General Counsel. But it's very clear in reading the bylaws that the board has the authority to amend or revise our bylaws. In the past, at least in the time that I've been a member of the council, we've made recommendations for bylaws changes, which the board, you know, after kind of a laborious process, the board has adopted. But somewhere in here it says explicitly, Article 9 under bylaws amendments, and I think, does everybody have a copy of the bylaws? Yeah, Article 9, the last sentence, any bylaw may be altered or amended or annulled at any time by a majority vote of the WMATA Board of Directors.
And also, in thinking more about the AAC and our structure, and I think sort of falling into this whole sort of thing is, not consciously, is that because so much of the work that we do is, and we have Christian Kent many times working with us so closely, that I have tended to talk with him and consult with him as far as making sure that, you know, my statements are accurate and that sort of thing. So I think that, without maybe knowing that I've done this, that we probably have followed on the AAC that maybe that line. But it's, I guess, when in thinking about it, it wasn't done because of prior approval, but more because I just needed to make sure that my facts were 100%, and I just wanted to verify that. So. Maybe we just fell into it in a more comfortable way, I think. But I actually also think that when I listen to the reports and on TV and on the radio all the time, 80% of the time, they're asking RAC opinions. So I don't know if there's an easy way to institute something like that, but certainly I think the media tends more towards this group than they do towards mine, which is good.
Over time for this agenda item already. Are there any motions or thoughts like that? Fred, I see you have your...
Yeah, I don't remember what my motion was from before, but I did have, this is just a minor little point. So if this is the policy, it would be really clever for them to actually put the telephone number on here that we're supposed to call.
It's on the website, I'm sure.
Can I move to vote?
You can.
I have so moved.
All right, vote on what? What's the motion?
Whether to adopt this or no.
To adopt the policy. Okay. So, wait, you're moving to adopt the policy?
Sorry, I didn't mean to put that in the affirmative.
No, that's fine.
I would, in moving to adopt the policy, I would vote no.
All right, so you're moving to reject the policy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So moved. Is there a second?
Right.
Seconded. All right. Any further debate on this motion? Okay.
I have a point of information. You know, this is not the time to be playing the Robert's Rules game, but this is a piece, a document that the board has given us. We are a creature of the board. Therefore, I don't think we have, it's sort of like saying, I agree that it's 924, but if I vote against it, it still doesn't make it not 924, or whatever that clock says in front of me. But what I'm trying to say is I'm not certain that we have any standing that would make a vote make sense. But that's my opinion. I just, you know, because it's something that the board has given us, and this is saying that it's the policy. The next step the board might take would be to formally amend our bylaws. And I'll be honest, this is very self-serving. I think we have better things to do than embark on that particular path of action or engagement on between us and the board. But that's my opinion. That I don't think this motion has any standing.
Sure, then I'm happy to withdraw.
That's my opinion.
It's already been seconded. We can have a vote on it, assuming people do want to vote on it. Any further discussion?
I mean, Loida, what do you think as the board secretary? I mean, what is this document?
See, to be honest with you, I feel like the board, in an attempt to continue the collaborative relationship that they established with the leadership, gave this policy to you and asked you for feedback. I really don't think it would be in the best interest towards working towards that relationship to do a vote. I feel like the board would like to have a discussion, and I think they've allowed that. Through the last two leadership meetings, it is ultimately up to you, but I feel like it would be more collaborative to have a discussion with them. And, you know, I look to Barbara in the discussions that we had.
You're absolutely right that it was at two meetings, but the first one, it was unfortunately just was at the tail end because we spent the whole time on some other topic. I think the commitment, I'm not sure. And this time, it was only me, not the whole group. So if it's a good dialogue to have, then perhaps the leadership team or the new leadership team should do it.
Well, that's something that we tried. I mean, we did that last time. We invited the board members to come here and explain it, and they rejected our offer.
Well,
so quite frankly, I have, you know, little sympathy.
I don't know that the board was asked to come and explain that.
Sounds like they were.
Technically, the only thing that you would have to adhere to is what's in the bylaws. So this additional stuff, it's there, that's great. But what we have in the bylaws is that all you're not allowed to do is represent a position of the Metro. And that's not what you're doing. We've discussed this as a member of the RAC. So this, I don't know what kind of standing it has, but what has priority are our bylaws. And so that's what we have to look to when we're going to the media. So if you go to the media and somebody from WMATA says, well, why'd you say that? You said, well, in adherence with our bylaws, I answered a question as a representative of the RAC or in my individual capacity. So technically, like this, unless they put it into our bylaws, really might not even have any standing. So.
Yep. I'd like to make this suggestion. We were already scheduled. We had talked, I think, for last month and the month before that, of putting bylaws review onto the calendar. I think that we ought to look at the entire bylaws and incorporate our position on this into a bylaws review, because just like at this meeting where people are walking in and saying, hi, vote for me, you know, that's something that we need to address, you know. And in a similar vein, we can address this bylaws change, because there is a difference between what is stated in the bylaws and what this document is. So I think we should do it as part of a bylaws review and fast forward the bylaws review. So that would be my suggestion, if you would accept that as a substitute motion.
All right, so that's an amendment?
I'm saying replace.
Right, amend to replace, yes. All right, any discussion on that amendment? Yes.
No, my only comment is it seems like there's the other option is just to, you know, they wanted a discussion. We can just come up with some comments. You know, I mean, there's a specific language here. We could just come up with some issues that we have with the language.
You know, and I do remember when it was first presented at the end of that meeting, they talked about if we had any concerns about the specific wording. And I don't know if that falls in that category. I don't know that they were saying, yeah, scratch the whole thing, but if we're talking wording, they may or may not be amenable to that.
All right, so the motion that we're considering now is Carol's amendment to fold this into the bylaw review process.
I don't think it's been seconded, though.
Is there a second to that, by the way? Yes, all right, Dexter seconds that. Thank you. Any further discussion on that amendment?
Move the question.
Okay. All those in favor of closing debate on that amendment, say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion passes. All right, so now we will vote directly on that amendment, the amendment being that we would then vote on whether to send this in for as part of the bylaw review process. So all in favor of that amendment, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Abstentions? All right, that motion passes. We did have one abstention.
Yeah, sorry, it's probably a stupid question. You can't abstain.
What? You can't abstain,
right.
Yes.
If you just don't feel like you understand enough.
Yes.
So did someone abstain?
Okay.
Thank you.
And abstain.
I'm sorry, I have a quick question. Can you elaborate on what it means for it to go to the bylaw review process?
Yes, that's fair because that's actually kind of down the agenda, but that's, so every other year?
About every five years.
Right, that we're supposed to look at the bylaws and judge whether there should be some changes, some amendments. So this is one of those years. So the proposal is that we would add discussion of this protocol to that naturally occurring process that we were going to do in the next couple months. Okay, any further discussion on this motion? Seeing none, let's just move straight to a vote. All in favor of this, please say aye.
Aye.
Oh, wait, do we know what we're voting on? I should state that. We voted on the amendment. Now we're voting on the full motion, which is to refer this to the committee that will take up the bylaw review. All in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed? Any abstentions? One abstention? Thank you. Okay, that motion passes. So we have referred that to the committee that will eventually deal with the bylaw review. Thanks, everybody. The work plan. We talked a little bit last time about what our priorities are for 2014. I have a list of those. I neglected to type those up and send them around. I will definitely do that tomorrow. But we have to talk a little bit now about how we're going to do it. We talked about a lot of those, about sort of the issue areas, and we can obviously add to that list as the year goes on. But in the last year, we had, we sort of revitalized the RAC committee process with some successes, some failures. I think we can all agree on that. So the discussion now is, how do we want to do our business for the next year? Do we want to have the committees? Do we want to have the same committees? Do we want to have them meet as often as we did the last time? How are we going to prioritize, or how will the committees prioritize the issues that we're going to talk about this time? So any discussion on that?
Respectfully, also, you have at least 50% new members who don't know what those issues are.
That's true.
If they would like to see that.
Yes, obviously. Yes. Any thoughts from previous committee members from last year about how things went, some suggestions for how we might do that this year? Yep.
I have to admit that I'm not remembering the details. We have put a lot of things on paper, and to make them up tonight to discuss with nothing to look at seems sort of not a useful thing to do. I'd rather maybe tie it into, if there's going to be orientation, that becomes a planning session, or that part of the next meeting does that when there is material to look at.
Yep, good.
One thing that I think worked well, at least on my AAC committee, was that we had the, we've done it at the full committee, but more at the subcommittee level, come up with work plans at the subcommittee level. They do all the work, report to the full committee, and then the full committee acts on those issues. So much of the work and so much of the work plans were really dealt down to the subcommittee, and then when some things came up to the full committee, we could bring it down to the subcommittees. And then from the subcommittees, we did have our working groups or task force that would report if we had larger issues that would go, bubble up through the subcommittees and full committees. We have two. Bus rail and metro access. So ours are sort of operational committees. Yours are somewhat different. One of the things that seems to work nicely on our level is making sure that we have work products that we can point to and show to the board that we've done X and Y. I think one of the things that AAC could do a better job on with alongside the RAC, and I think this is pretty powerful, is when we have some recommendations that we share that with the RAC so that we can co-sponsor recommendations that go before the board. So that might be something that I think that we can try to do a better job for 2014.
Okay. Yeah, Lorraine.
I think that the creation of committees, we should leave during for the orientation planning sessions, because this group may have other ideas, and we may want to create different committees or that cover different things. So I think that it should be done, and that gives better idea also to the new members what it is exactly, how we do it, and what we do and how we do it.
Maybe because we have so many new people here, there's some fundamental education in that. Carol probably has the titles of the committees memorized better than I do, but we had three committees. We had one that focused on customer and communication issues, one that focused on safety and security, I can't remember what else, and one that focused on budget and planning. None of the three committees, for three different reasons, met regularly during the year. And it was three different reasons. And I think we all, well, some of us thought that the committee concept was a good one, but we didn't master it yet. not in this iteration. I wasn't here when it was around before. But that's what the basic structure was, and they were to meet each of them once a month on a different Wednesday from this meeting, and usually in person, but maybe sometimes conference call.
Fred?
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know why you put that up. It's
okay.
That was from some time ago. Actually.
Okay. Karen?
Thanks so much. I thought the structure of the committees worked well. It aligned with the board. I think some of the issues that I had with the committees is that I think that to a large degree, we worked harder and not smarter, and that we need to use more efficient processes to get our work done. And I think, as well, we just need to be a little bit more organized and ensure that what we're working on is something that's valuable to the public as well as to WMATA as well. So instead of, I think, quite often we would just throw things into the bucket that we wanted to work on, but I think we need to really determine the five or six really important things that we can do within a year so that we can provide input to the board and the public as well. Thank you.
And just to piggyback on that, I think a lot of what we found is that the work in the subcommittees was sometimes overturned in the full RAC or commented on or sent back in a very different form, and that some discussions at the committee level sort of were all for naught when they got to the main RAC as opinions changed. Okay, so what I'm hearing – oh, go ahead, Debbie.
Keep in mind, we had a subcommittee under a different board chairperson. Keep in mind that chairperson was seen more willing to work with it than the new one we have now, if I remember that. Maybe we can explain the new member the overview of how we established with the relationship with the previous board member. Board chairperson before we were going to new, first time with customer service, how we worked with the previous one, then how did we made it to have a customer service with a newer board member. We wanted them to get a better exposure to the kind of the board members.
Yeah, I think the original idea, again, as Barbara was saying, is to make parallel committees to what the board has. But I think what we found in the end, as Karen said, and I think Carol was saying as well, is that a lot of the issues fell to the purview of one of the committees rather than the other two. And also that the irregularity of the committee meetings made it difficult to really produce tangible products that could be brought to the full RAC for votes in the way that Patrick was describing that the AAC does. So. With that, what I'm hearing is that we should start thinking about this more in terms of the orientation process for new members and develop it sort of at that level. Is there general agreement on that?
Yes.
We don't really need to vote on this necessarily, but yeah, Dan?
I really like the idea of just figuring out first what are the things that we'd really like to do this year in terms of priorities and then organizing based on that.
We did have that discussion, and again, that's on me. I should have written that up so we could have had that in advance today, but we did have that discussion. So there is sort of a foundation to build on from that. Did somebody? Yeah. No? Okay. Okay, so with that understanding that we're going to work through this sort of orientation process, yes? No. Let's talk a little bit about that orientation. Again, we have a lot of new members this year. In past years, there's been an orientation session, usually on another Wednesday night, sometime in January, where the new members can get together. And there are usually some presentations from Metro staff members where they come in and explain sort of how Metro works, sort of Metro 101, if you will. they can answer some of the questions. So it really gives you sort of a baseline with which to judge all the other presentations that you hear throughout the year. You also usually get some sort of introduction from other RAC members in terms of how we do business, how the how feedback goes up to the board, down to the board through us, what we address in all of the meetings with the board, and just sort of how this strange beast that is the RAC actually runs or pretends to run. So with that, maybe John, do you want to discuss a little bit about how that would, or Loida, as the case may be? I don't know who's in charge of that now. And for those of you who don't know John,
I know I've talked with all of you, and I didn't get a chance to meet you, many of you, in person tonight, so hi.
Yes. Yeah, so please, yes, introduce yourself.
Sure. I'm John Pasek. I am the Assistant Board Secretary and currently the RAC Staff Coordinator. I'm sort of transitioning away from the RAC Staff Coordinator bit, but you're stuck with me until we hire somebody else. So I'm your primary staff contact here at Metro, and I've been flooding you with emails for the past couple weeks, so you'll still be getting those from me for the foreseeable future. I guess in terms of orientation planning, in previous years, it has, as Ben said, sort of contained two components, some Metro 101 stuff, some things that maybe as a rider you already know or some things that you wouldn't know, and then some RAC 101 stuff. I think with people's, people's desire to also incorporate sort of what you all want to do as a group over the next year as sort of a third leg to that stool. What Carol suggested and what I think would be a good idea is to involve members themselves a little bit more in the planning of these sessions, just so that I have some idea of what you need, but I'm stuck in this building, 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, and so I'm not always sure what's mysterious and what is not mysterious. I guess ideally from my perspective as somebody who tries to support you, I guess what I'd like to get out of tonight is, maybe 4 to 6 people willing to sort of new and old to sort of pull something together that would be representative in terms of what it is that you feel that you need to know and what our end product should be for orientation sessions that we can then do over the course of the next either, I would say 4 to 6 weeks, just because as you all saw, public hearings, there's a lot of stuff coming up the last week of January, the first week of February. So I guess ideally that would be what I would think would be most helpful right now, is to maybe try and do this in a little bit smaller group and then just sort of report out to the larger group and get your feedback and then go forward with something hopefully within the next couple weeks with another session.
Okay. Any questions on that? So the basis of that is you will be in touch to start scheduling that.
Well, no, the basis of that is I need 4 to 6 good men and women.
Okay.
Is what I need. And then don't call us, we'll call you.
Okay.
But before you all walk out of here, I need to rope at least a few people into helping me out with this.
Okay.
Guiding me, as it were.
Or if you want, or if it's okay with you to think about it, I'll tell you that this is something I feel very strongly about. I feel that we have got 21 people, and I think I talked about it with somebody, we talked about it being somewhat like a jury, and except that a jury does have a focus. And there are 21 people with different reasons why they applied to the RAC, different reasons perhaps why they were selected. And I think an orientation is an opportunity for us to get some bonding done, which started, fortunately, I think, with the meet and greet. But I think it's important that we get some people who are brand new, some people who've been here, maybe one or two people who are brand new, one or two people who have been here for a year, and, maybe one or two people who are more senior, and together come up with what do we need to know to function effectively as a group. That's what I'm personally hoping to achieve. And then, depending on what you all come up with, let that be the determining factor as to whether or not we do that over 4 to 6 weeks or we do it in one long session. you know, with some follow-ups maybe during the course of the year. That's my thought about it. But I think it's very important with seven new people, which is roughly, what, one-third of the RAC, that new people play a big role in this, and that the orientation should be for everybody, not just for new people.
Yep. Okay. Without any further discussion on that agenda item,
Do we want to just have six people volunteer while we're sitting here?
All right. That sounds like a good idea. I see some nods from the staff table. All right. So we've got Dan.
So we got several new ones.
Karen.
And Fred's a one-year-old person. That's good.
Yes. There's some nice diversity there.
We got almost all the new ones.
Lorraine.
Carol and I are the seniors here. So.
Thomas. Did you raise your hand, Dexter? Dexter, yeah. And Robert. Gee, we may have to have a bake-off.
Can I just read this back to you? Dexter, Williams, Thomas Drass, Lorraine, Candace Walsh, Karen Lynch, Aldea, Mary Miller, and Daniel Kirk. Anybody else?
Fred.
Fred, thank you.
Yeah, so Fred and Karen are our one-year-olds.
Okay.
And Carol and Lorraine are our seniors.
I didn't really volunteer, but I'm going to stick my...
Oh, I thought you did.
Yep.
Maybe I don't want to do this right now, but could we have like an offline discussion of the process, John?
Yep.
Because yes. As wonderful it is, it's not, I don't know about everybody, but sometimes coming all the way down here for an evening meeting is a little bit burdensome.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I think there's other ways we could do this efficiently without having to actually sit here.
Okay.
So I'll send you some suggestions.
All right, so let's go on to the next agenda item, outreach and community meetings. We do this every time we meet. Just if anybody has any meetings that they know of that are going on in their neighborhood or in their sort of in a jurisdiction or anywhere else that have to do with Metro, this is where we sort of open it up to anyone who wants to make an announcement that RAC members may want to attend one of those meetings. One thing that I'd like to bring up just at the start is it's come to my attention this evening that the next RAC meeting actually falls on the night of a public hearing, and that's going to be in Arlington for our Virginia members. So a question I'll just pose is, do we want to delay the next RAC meeting until the week after? Because usually we meet on the first Wednesday of the month. Do we want to do that to allow the Virginia members to go to that Arlington session? The new date would be the 12th. Anybody have any problems with that? Debbie?
A first public hearing will be January 27th at the 20th minute. I mean,
the February 5th public hearing on the fare increases, et cetera, would fall on the night of the RAC.
Okay, I'm telling you, the first meeting will begin.
First meeting's on the 29th. It's all on the
first meeting with January 27th.
Nope, it's all on the other. There you go, that one. So, is there any objection? Let's put it this way: is there any objection to postponing the RAC meeting next month to the 12th? Seeing none. All right.
I move that we well, actually, we have the session after the motion, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I move that we reschedule our February 5th meeting to 1 week later, the February 12th. But I'm asking that we get a show of hands of if there's anybody that rules out that they've already got plans and they can't possibly make it. I think it'd be good to know. They may not object, but they can't be here.
Sure. All right, so the motion, is anyone second that? Seconded, thank you. So the motion is to move our meeting next month to February 12th. Any discussion? All right, all in favor of moving our meeting to the 12th, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Any abstentions? All right, passed. And now, the main event, council elections. John, you're going to have to school me a little bit on which ones we do first. What's the order? I don't have the historical knowledge here. I've forgotten from last time. Is it vice chairs first, chairs second, or?
I think it's chair, then vice.
Chair, then vice. I think that's how we did it last year, too.
Let me just...
That makes sense because the chair could be a vice chair, you know.
True.
If they don't get to be chair.
Okay, so we'll start off with the election for the chair position. Are there any nominations for the chair position?
Do we raise our hand or do our thing?
Either one. Barbara.
I would like to nominate for chair Carol Carter Walker. And do I just stop there or can I say a little more?
You can say a little more.
Well, she sent a letter out and I could never do any a better job than what Frank DiBernardo did to send out in voicing his approval of Carol as a candidate. She has an incredible amount of experience with REC. She's really hardworking and passionate, and one important ingredient, she has retired and has a little more time than some people, grace and intelligence and leadership, and I think she'd be a fabulous candidate.
Okay. Is there a second?
I second.
Seconded. Thank you.
I'd like to just say something, though. So I'd like to second it, but I want, it's not because she's my cousin, because she's not, but she really has been a great vice chairman in the last year.
Thank you.
She'd be great.
Thank you.
Okay. Are there any other nominations for the chair position? Seeing none, we will hold a vote on... Oh, wait, sorry. Would you like to make a statement before we vote? I'm just going to vote anyway. No,
yeah,
go ahead.
In the interest of time, I have a new and improved version of my nomination statement and Frank DiBernardo's endorsement. I'll just say that when I boiled it all down after receiving some feedback from some people like Dexter, it's about communications. We need to improve our communications with the riders. We need to improve our communications between and among ourselves, between members and the leadership team, and between us and the board. And that's what I'm going to be about this year.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. So all in favor of Ms. Carol Carter Walker as chair of the RAC, please let's raise our hands this time. Okay. All opposed? Any abstentions? I will abstain from all of these votes. All right, so moved. Madam Chair, congratulations. You want to handle
no.
from here on out?
Yeah.
Isn't that what we did last
year? The end of the meeting.
That's what we did last year. But anyway, all right. Well, for the next couple minutes then, let's move on to Maryland. The Maryland Vice Chair position, are there any nominations?
I would like to nominate Karen Lynch as Maryland Vice Chair.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded. Thank you. From an actual Marylander also. That's significant. Would you like to make a statement?
I actually consider it a great honor to serve as Vice Chair if I am nominated and then approved by the board. And I sent out a short statement today while I was traveling from New Jersey. And for the new people that don't know me yet, I have been on the committee for a year now, the council, I'm sorry, for a year now. I represent Prince George's County. And as I said earlier, I am a transportation safety professional. So I think I bring a different perspective to the committee. And I think that I can add, and that's one of the reasons why I want to serve as vice chair, because I think that I can bring new innovative ways to do business. I think earlier today I said that we need to work smarter and not harder. And some of the other people that I've worked with over the last year have seen some of my emails and heard some of my comments. So I'm hoping to incorporate some of that into the council so that we are actually representing the public and we are making efficient and effective kinds of recommendations to the board as well. I will say that I did serve as the 2013 chair of the Operations and Communications Committee, and we didn't accomplish as much as I wanted to, but I think that I've learned a lot from serving in that capacity that I can bring to a leadership perspective. So that's really all I have to say, and again, I would consider it an honor to serve in this capacity. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other nominations for Maryland Vice Chair? Seeing none, we will proceed directly to a vote. All in favor of Ms. Karen Lynch as the Maryland Vice Chair, please raise your hand. All opposed? Abstentions? All right. Madam Vice Chair, congratulations. All right, on to Virginia. Are there any nominations? Yes, Lorraine.
I would like to nominate Barbara Hermanson to continue her well done for Virginia Vice Chair.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded. Thank you. Would you like to make your statement?
Yeah, I didn't send anything out this year. I did last year, and I was about the only one. So I thought, shoot, I'm not investing. I couldn't compete with the thing you sent out anyway. I think one of my best attributes is that I always show up. I've missed a...
That's true. She is always there. And
I'm
at
every
that.
Meeting since I joined. I've been at every executive meeting, every leadership meeting, every meeting that we've had with the board. And I've been to enough hearings that I've actually got a little bit of familiarity now with a few of the board members. They know me. They know where I'm from and what I think, and I think that's very helpful. I have a career full of experience doing liaison work between two groups. I mentioned that earlier, and trying to find the happy medium so that both sides think that you're on their side, and neither side thinks you're on the other side, and that you're a good liaison. And I think that's a lot of what we need to be between our writers and the board that has appointed us. I share Carol's passion for communication, and it has been a wonderful honor and a real education to do this for a year, and I would welcome the chance to do it for another year.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other nominations? Seeing none, all in favor of Barbara Hermanson to serve as Virginia Vice Chair for 2014? Raise your hand. All opposed? Any abstentions? All right. Madam Vice Chair, congratulations. All right, on to the district. Are there any nominations for the DC Vice Chair position? Self-nominations are also allowed. I should mention that. Yes. Any nominations? Yes, Ed Sherry. For the DC Vice Chair? Okay.
I second the nomination.
Seconded. Candace, would you like to make your statement?
I guess I've been on the rack for the past 2 years, and so I've seen that, you know, Metro Bus and Metro Rail are extremely important, and we have an important job to do. And I think that hopefully this year we'll sort of focus and hone in on the things that can make the rack more involved in the public and get the public more involved in the changes that Metro is making, and hopefully we'll have a happier public going forward. I don't really know. I didn't prepare anything, and so I don't really know what to say, but I'm willing to work hard, and so hopefully you guys will vote for me.
All right, thank you. Any other nominations? Seeing none, all in favor of Candace Walsh as serving as DC Vice Chair? All opposed? sorry. Any abstentions? All right. Madam Vice Chair, congratulations. Okay. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for our candidates, for the new leadership team. Congratulations. You have your work cut out for you in 2014, I'm sure. Open mic. Any things to discuss in this last session?
I can thank our outgoing chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you
very much.
It's been a pleasure to serve. I've enjoyed my time. I think we made some good progress in the last year. I think the RAC evolved a little bit. There's still a lot of evolution to do. But I think the incoming leadership team, all ladies, by the way, which I think is going to be great for us. There you go. We were even 2 for 2 this last time. But anyway, I think they're going to be great, and I think they're going to really help to bring the RAC up one further step from where it is. So congratulations to the new team as well. More open mic. Yes, Lorraine.
I became aware of this just last week. There's going to be Shyam Kanan, WMATA's managing director of planning, will discuss the Transit Authority long-range plans and vision for Arlington County and the greater Washington, D.C. region. And this is going to be at the George Mason University Arlington campus on Founders Hall Auditorium on January 23rd from 6 to 8, and it's free. So anybody that may want to be of interest can attend.
Thank you.
Well, first, I saw that presentation at a conference I attended, and he does a great job. Very informative about 2025. I hardly recommend it, and I will go again. What I wanted, in talking about always being here, I would like to recognize the public member that is always here and has been noticeably quiet tonight. Did you really? I guess my memory's faulty, but it seems like he's always here. And Kurt, you'll all get to know him. He provides. He's not shy about giving us feedback, and
he's our reality check.
He's our reality check. Yes.
Debbie.
About the public hearing. I'm sorry if I brought up the wrong time, but there's a difference between the dates different. This one stays January 27th, but this one stayed January 29th. So I'm quite confused with the date.
What page are you looking at?
Where does it say the 27th?
Oh, in our
hospital
says it in our presentation.
Oh, it does. Page 24, 25 says. Yeah. January 27th to February 6th.
I will take the blame for that. We had initially, I think when we started out, had a hearing on Monday.
Okay.
That first Monday, the 27th, it got moved. So it's the week of January 27th.
Ah, okay. So, but the 29th is the correct date. Okay. Good catch. Thank you for...
And just to give people a heads up, generally speaking, since these hearings are sort of chaired by the members of the board, who are also many of them politicians, generally speaking, John will kind of contact us beforehand to find out who's going to be at what hearings, and those we're generally introduced. So this is a good time to make your presence known at whatever hearings you can attend. I think it's really important.
We generally do try to split it up, so at least one person from the RAC is there at each hearing, preferably in their own jurisdiction. Yeah, Debbie.
Do I need to tell you with the hearing?
You should let John know.
Yeah, let John
so
know
sure
if you're interested. And I believe
let me know, and then I'll send out a grid of who's going where, so you know who looks.
Okay. Lorraine.
Yes, I wanted to make a comment, because I know that not everybody got to make the questions for the budget presentation. For the new people, our procedure is that generally if you had any questions for these two people that were here, you email them to John, and John will forward them to the appropriate person. And that way, hopefully, you will get the answer that, to your questions.
Any other questions?
very basic question. Attending these meetings, what are things that you'd like us to do?
Generally,
other than listen.
Yes, we'll listen, comment as necessary, and also usually we take notes and we send them around to other RAC members just so people can know what's raised at all these different meetings. I think you'll find that a lot of the comments are pretty similar across all of these meetings, but sometimes there's a wide variation from time to time. So that's generally what we do. There's no formal obligation to do any of that, but it is appreciated. Anything else for open mic? All right, seeing none, we are adjourned until the 12th. Thanks, everybody.